Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? I'm your host Dana, or the DHK as I'm known, and we watched three things this week. We started off with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, a major, major spoiler alert for that one. We also watched the first two episodes of Silo, which is a new show on Apple TV+, a spoiler alert for that as well. And then we watched Queen Charlotte on Netflix, and while we watched varying degrees of it, some of us finished it, some of us didn't, we're just going to issue a blanket spoiler alert because enough things get alluded to that if you were planning on watching it all the way through, you'll probably want to do that before listening to this episode. And finally, because it wouldn't be obvious from the episode title, we just want to give a light spoiler alert for some of the plot points in The Mandalorian Season 3. They do come up oh so briefly. Then be sure to stay tuned after the main discussion as there's a couple of quick follow-up points. And without further ado, here's We're Watching What? All right, we have closed out, supposedly, the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy. I'm going to start with Matt. How did you feel?
I really enjoyed it.
Really?
I'm very surprised. Very surprised.
Oh,
you know, I mean, okay. It's no strange... No, I was like, no, yeah, it's no secret that like this is not my franchise, my Marvel franchise. I love the comics. I'm not in love with the films. I like things about the first one mostly. I don't love the second one much at all, except for the baby Groots. But yeah, but I don't really vibe with it. But this one got me. I liked it.
Did the animal storylines have anything to do with that?
Partially. I think that it took a darker, grittier kind of look at things. And it, I think a lot of it, like, I think that helped and it made it such a character story. But I think also in addition to that, I think that some of the silly, like it was still funny in parts, but like some of the silliness that I think has kind of, to me, plagued the first two, felt like it was lighter here. It wasn't as present. It was there to provide some like a little bit of like levity, or add some lightness to what was going on. But overall, it was a Guardians story finally. I felt like the other two have not really been like Guardians comic stories, if you will. It's been its own kind of brand of thing, but this felt like it was actually, I mean, granted, you know, they changed some things about Rocket's backstory, but it was largely lifted in a lot of ways. So it felt kind of like, okay, you actually were drawing from real source material this time, I haven't really felt that way about the other two much. So tonally, I guess. I think it was more in line with what I've always wanted from Guardians.
Okay. Jackie?
I'm in two minds about it. I really hated the graphic imagery in it. I was very, very upset by it. And if I think about some of it, I just cry. It really, really was disturbing to me. And so I hope to never watch it again. But I will say that, you know, that being said, I think it wasn't a bad movie. It's just that kind of stuff isn't for me. Didn't like it.
Yep, that's fair. I'm going to ask, what did you two think that my reaction to this film was?
I would have guessed that you would like it, but then for the reasons that I liked it more than usual, I could guess that maybe you didn't like it as much because Guardians is mostly fun and it wasn't very fun, you know?
You're right. I didn't like it as much. I don't even think it's because it wasn't fun. I think it speaks to like my bigger frustrations with the Marvel franchise as a whole right now, in that if it had just been the Rocket stuff, I would have been fine. If we'd shaved 30 minutes off this movie, I'd been like, great. But the Gamora storyline where it's like she's back, and I know it's very comic booky, but I don't feel like it's translating well into the MCU at this point. You know, to have somebody come back and do whatever, like that's totally fine in the comic books for whatever reason, because we've had zero stakes in almost any Marvel movie. I was just so at the end of my rope with it because I was like, cool, you've made it pretty clear. Like, this is supposedly the end of this like iteration of the Guardians. So like, wouldn't it make sense to, I don't know, have someone more permanently leave the Guardians or anything along those lines? And then I know James Gunn is like the music guy at this point, but there were a couple sequences that I just felt were unnecessarily shoehorned in because he had one extra song he wanted to get on the soundtrack and was like, I'll have a slow-mo walking scene to XYZ. And I was just like, get to the point.
Please. Yeah, it was really long, honestly. Yeah. It felt very long.
Yeah, you could shave. You could shave for sure. And I do have, I mean, I really enjoyed it and I actually do want to watch it again, but I do have things. I have notes of things that I did not love. But the Gamora thing, it's funny you bring that up because I agree with you that like the way it's handled here is kind of feels out of place, really, with what we've seen as possible and what happens in this MCU version of Marvel, right? And so I agree with you, but what's funny is, and I didn't necessarily need her to be in the film really, but I liked her in this movie more than I've liked her ever before, because this was Gamora. Like, she was finally acting like Gamora, where I feel like previous Gamora, she was okay. I never disliked her, but my
biggest complaints, I get what you're saying.
First Guardians,
yeah.
My biggest complaints with the first Guardians are his characterizations. Drax is not Drax. Mantis in the second one is just a disgrace to me, but I liked her better. In this one, I felt like they actually gave her some emotional scenes, some dramatic, some actual, like, okay, now you're getting to the bottom of this character more, that I feel like they've just skated over a little bit before. And I felt that Rocket and Groot were always handled really well, and I think they still were, or, you know, decently. Groot's kind of just there now, but Rocket was handled really well here. But what's funny is then you add in Adam Warlock, and I thought he was basically a disgrace in this movie. I was like, it's just, okay, we're going to bring in another new character, and guess what? He's another space moron. Because that's just like what it seems that James Gunn does when he brings a new character, and it's just like, here's another space moron for you, and then it's like, okay, two or three films later, we'll get to who they are. You know, like, and that's been my kind of overall complaint with it. But this to me felt very much like he was like, he knows this is the last time he's touching any of these characters, and was like, I'm going to just go out there and try to do the best I can by them at that point. But I felt that a little bit, aside from Adam Warlock.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. And we're back. Yeah, as somebody who doesn't have any affinity towards Adam Warlock, but I was excited because everyone else was excited. I was just like, why were we all so excited about this? Like, what's the big deal?
It's like the one actual purpose he served was to save Star-Lord at the end. Yeah, it was just like to save Star-Lord.
Oh, like, of all the people. Okay, can I just cut to the, like, major spoiler of it? In that, how did your theater react when the thing at the end came on? It said, Star-Lord will return.
Someone was like, ooh, and then like everyone was kind of quiet, and then everyone's like, oh, that's it, like, whatever. It was just like, who cares? Like, you really wrapped him up in this, like, why do we need him back?
My theater audibly groaned, and so I'm like, of all the people
we need Chris Pratt
for him. Yeah, well for all the people for Adam Warlock to save, why him? Like, you know, that would have been the perfect, like, sacrificial, you know, wrapping up of the storyline. And this goes back to my big point about, no, there's no consequences to anything. You know, Drax should have died. I don't want Drax to die, but Drax should have died at some point. Or Nebula could have died at some point. You know, anybody.
Yeah, give it something. And I actually thought for a second, I didn't think they were necessarily definitely doing it. But when he did start to, you know, become
freeze and not explode,
I thought maybe they're killing. I don't know, because I was like, everyone
thought maybe they would kill him, and it was like. Yeah. I was kind of happy about that because I was like, oh, that's a cool ending.
Yeah, so,
like,
give it something.
Cooler than I expected to be, you know. But then when he...
Right.
I'm sick of the weird space. Like, we can just survive in space. Fine.
Yeah. Well, it felt like, oh, maybe they'll actually do it. And everyone was, like, predicting maybe Rocket would die, right? Because the trailer and all that, whatever. But then while watching it, it becomes very clear he's not going to, because it's all about saving him. So you're just like, okay, like, well, if he did, I guess he could, but it would be like...
He could have sacrificed himself for, like, all the kids and all the animals and all. Yeah. Like, that would have been
after all said and done. Yes, that would have been fine.
Oh,
but
that would have been cool.
They couldn't have died. They couldn't have killed him based on what they were trying to save him about, or how they were, you know, like, that would have been a little like, oh, what are we watching this for? But yeah, something big should have happened. Like, even Nebula, something, like you said, something big would have been good. I did like with Drax, though. I liked the father thing, that comet and all that stuff, because it was like a thing where I was like, yeah, now you're actually acknowledging the purpose of Drax's existence was that, you know, he got created to defeat Thanos. Like, he was resurrected because Thanos killed him and his daughter on accident, and like, just as like a byproduct of just doing stuff. And he was brought back specifically to avenge. And it's like this thing where, like, you just never talk about it really. And they never go there. And it was like, his characterization was just missing. And it was like, okay, so now you're hinting at it, which is like, you know, cool. I liked the hint at it, you know, like, just the nod. At this point, I'm taking nods and I'm like, ooh, yay. Cause I've just been,
that's
so
how they've
not
beaten, they've
happy
beaten us down into just accepting a nod.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take what I can get. Like, I'm just, you know, I've been so just unhappy. I thought the High Evolutionary was kind of, it's funny. I didn't feel like his, for as long as it was and as many scenes that took place with what he was doing in the past with Rocket and all that stuff, I somehow left the theater not really feeling like he was as somehow fleshed out as I had hoped he would be. But I did like his performance overall. I thought, okay. And, you know, he has nothing to do with the creation of Rocket in the comics, but I thought that giving, bridging what he, because he does create these animal people, you know, so like bridging that with the Rocket story, I thought was creative. And I was totally like cool with that, because I was like, okay, it makes sense. And you're still kind of like preserving the integrity behind the storytelling originally, you know. And it was cool seeing Lila. I really liked Linda Cardellini's performance as her. I was missed opportunity to kill her off, but you know, but it was sad. And I thought that that kind of, I'm going to say afterlife heaven scene, whatever that was. That was one of my favorite parts.
I cried during that.
That was one of my favorite parts. I didn't cry a ton before that, but once he saw her up there, I cried, or over there, wherever it was, you know.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just like, of course, the scenario you've set up in any circumstances. It's the Sarah McLachlan arms of an angel scenario, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, you didn't earn this on your own necessarily. Like the recipe was already there and you strategically used it, which is fine. But, I don't know if you could have seen like the rest of the, you didn't have to necessarily see the rest of the movie for that to come across as sad.
No, it would have been sad regardless. But but I felt like there were enough of the bloated material. I felt like the scenes of them bonding in the cages.
Oh no, that was, I was fine with
that.
Parts
I liked a lot. So I was like, okay, I would keep that stuff, just kind of shave down some other things. I did think that like at the end there with like nowhere, like driving nowhere all the way there to do the confrontation was just this thing where I was like, why are you putting all these people, innocent people at risk? That like, this is their home. And you're just like, we're just going to move it over here to fight and have potential invasion.
That's
I was like, you guys
are
so messed up.
That's how
the
Guardians call.
Yeah. But I was like, oh.
The answer said call. And that is how it works. I don't know. There was I don't like, but they just dropped the fact. You could have gotten away with not watching the holiday special about it, but they do sort of pick up being like, by the way, they're siblings now. And it's like, what? You know?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I wanted it to be done in a more satisfying, like finished done in a more satisfying way. And I did not feel that. And then I would have been happy walking out of there with it being like, okay, that's it. And then they're like, just kidding. Your least favorite character's coming back.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, yeah, I guess he's coming back. How, I don't know or don't care. But it's like they set the scene before that set up a new team of Guardians, essentially.
Right.
So I thought, if they had said the Guardians of the Galaxy will return, I think people
that's what I thought we were going to get.
You know, but oh, Star-Lord will return? You're like, oh, well, he's the one we don't want back.
Yeah.
Also,
well, he's the one we've dedicated the most time to and had the most conclusions to his story and like all this stuff. So, like, what?
Yeah, because the first one was so about him that it was okay, you know, and it's like, okay. But I don't know if I'm crazy and whatever. Maybe I don't know if he lost or a certain amount of weight somewhere, whatever. But did he have like a nose job or something? Chris Pratt to me looked so not like Chris Pratt in this movie. Like I could tell it was him.
I thought he's like bloated actually.
I thought he was bloated.
Because his face looked thinner to me. His body looked a little bigger, but his face, something about it, it was weird. I was like, I kept looking at him. I don't know why he had neck beard too the whole time, but I was just looking at him. I was like, what is going on here? And something was different and I couldn't like figure it out. I don't know.
I mean, not to... I noticed that they all looked a little softer than usual.
Mm-hmm. I think they didn't get as much lead time.
Yeah. And it's not a judgment.
To get their bodies in a place or whatever.
Yeah. They looked perfectly fine and skinny and healthy. But I was like, oh, we look actually more like real people, which I'm not complaining about.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know.
Or maybe the costumes were less flattering.
Thinned out to me. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah.
So I couldn't figure it out, but I was just curious, and I was like, well, I don't know. But
no, I'm looking at him now. He does, ironically, has a little, like, double chin going. This is a very unflattering promo.
His nose felt, like, thinner and pointier to me than I normally think of it. But
maybe it's because the rest of his face is wider. Yeah.
Yeah, and he had the facial hair and stuff, so I have no idea. But, I mean, my first introduction to him was Parks and Rec, and he was chunkier there, so I have no, you know, and that's how I still think of him in my head, to be honest. So it's like, I don't know.
Maybe it's the contouring.
Who knows? But yeah, it could be that. But it could have been like the way the facial hair was done and everything. It just changes things.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But I just kept on focusing on it, being like, what is going on here? Kid Rocket. I also would have liked Young Rocket to be voiced by, because it said to make him young. I would have liked him to be voiced by someone actually young. But like I saw Sean Gunn did it. And I was like, I know he does.
Oh,
I know he
know
plays
that.
Like I think he does mocap stuff for Rocket, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Or he does some. He does, yeah. So I thought that was like okay, a nice little thing, but I was like, but this is an adult man voice trying to be a kid still. And I was like, why not just have Bradley Cooper do it then?
I did think it was Bradley Cooper. Yeah.
I thought it was. Yeah. And I was like, oh, why didn't you get a kid to do this? And then I was curious and I saw Sean Gunn was credited as Young Rocket. And I was like, well, then what? Just changing one man for another?
Well, was he credited as Young Rocket voice or just Young Rocket?
You know, I didn't know if it said voice. Maybe he's credited as, for body stuff.
Yeah, he might be the mocap Young Rocket.
Maybe, yeah. That could make sense.
I am.
But it still sounded like adult man voice. Maybe it was
Bradley. Oh, yeah. That's why I thought it was Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking back at photos mostly because I was looking at Chris Pratt's nose. And the pictures from Comic-Con came up last time they were there. And I was in the pit. At the photographer's pit during it. And I remember them coming out and being all emotional and being like, oh, it's our last one, blah, blah, blah. And then poor Chuck Woody Awuji coming out in the full makeup as the high evolutionary and trying to be in character, doing the Loki thing.
Yeah.
And it just not working. And I feel like that is somewhat that translated to the movie being like, look how cool this is. We brought in the high evolutionary. And people being like, okay. That's what's weird.
So he was in costume and everything, you're saying?
Yep. He was in the full purple with the pulled back head skin.
But what's funny is that's a very movie costume. He doesn't look like that in the comics very much. So it's also Loki, unmistakable, right? You could have never seen one and have heard of who he is. You know, and it's it translates. But this was he has I think his face is usually robotic looking.
We had no idea who he was or what he was supposed to be or whatever. And I had to turn to the people next to me. I'd be like, what did they say he is?
Yeah.
The high evolutionary was like, okay, that's a thing. If you say so.
Yeah. Well, and I did kind of hope. It's funny because the first Guardians, I was hoping for a bunch of different cameos and things to drop in. And then this one, I did feel the same where it's not that I need it to be totally. I like that it was able to be its own thing, but when you get into Counter Earth and all that stuff, it's the door is wide open for Galactus, for all kinds of stuff that could be teased for the future. We have Fantastic Four coming. It all connects so much with High Evolutionary and with that and all the things that I was like, I thought they would do something, but nothing. Nothing that I saw anyway. But but Counter Earth is most famously something that everyone tries to save from Galactus. So I was like, okay, I thought there could be a little nod, you know?
Interesting.
But yeah, but nothing. But which is totally fine. But because I think that was part of what was refreshing to me about it is I felt like story-wise, I think focusing so much on Rocket and the team dynamic that it was nice to have something that felt a little more, even though it's cosmic and out of this world all over the place, something a little more contained. It's not just another oh, I just want to destroy and rule the galaxy or the world or whatever, that kind of thing. Yeah. It was very kind of like this man's playing God, but their friend is involved with what he's doing, and in a way that not his fault, but you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it was nice to have it be a more personal story rather than another world's at risk thing.
Yeah.
I appreciated that about it.
I didn't dislike Counter Earth. I thought it was silly and whatever.
Yeah.
And
the animal thing was funny.
The animal thing was funny. The lack of translator or the lack of whatever. Yeah. And then the get your feet off the couch was shticky. Yeah, I laughed a little bit, you know.
Yeah, there were little things that made me laugh here and there and stuff. And I was like, I thought the little humor bits landed for the most part. But it just didn't feel too oversaturated with it. So I was digging it.
No, I was fine with that. I just wanted them to shave off some of the other stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's easily 20 to 30.
30, at least minimum 30. You could have done this movie in an hour.
I was like,
50.
Maybe an hour, yeah.
Yeah, hour 50.
Just 50. Do the Rocket story and just end it. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have to include credits, but in the hour 50. But
yeah, because by the time when it was he got off the High Evolutionary ship, and then obviously they were trying to break into the ship, and then it was clear that there was going to be this big finale sequence on it, but we had to go back and get there. I was like, oh, this is long.
Stupid hallway fights. I don't need that again. We did in the first one.
I know, but I did like that single shot, big. I was into it.
That's fine, but then cut two other fights.
No.
Oh, no, totally. Yeah, but I liked that hallway one. I was into it.
Yeah, cut two other fights. Because they did another, single-ish shot, circle around Rocket Groot on top of each other. I was like, no.
Yeah. You already did that. But then they did it here with Groot and Star-Lord, which in the High Evolutionaries, throne room, which I thought was fine, but then don't do it again with Rocket and Groot. You know, yeah. It's like, you already did it once here. You know, like, yeah. I already felt the nod to the first one. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It smelled.
One of my notes is just, damn it, Adam Warlock. And well, I know that's for him saying just, our Lord.
Yeah, well, it's just such a waste of a cool character, and it's like maybe they'll do more with him, but just to make him just another bumbling like kind of dummy, and I don't know. But that was in the second one. I thought Aisha, I liked her. I really love Elizabeth Debicki, so I really liked her performance, and I liked her. But then she was just so wasted in this, like none of it ever mattered. And then I don't like that she's his son, or he's her son.
Like that, yeah, like, I mean it's like, son.
He's
in
her
like
older
a...
brother. Well, he's her older brother. Like, yeah, oh. That's why I hated in the second one. It was like, oh, now you're growing like Adam Warlock. Like, you are created in his image. So it was like, you can reverse that, but like, I don't like the son-mother dynamic thing. It was more brother-sister kind of, I don't know. But yeah. Whatever. But they're just so like wasted. And she's as powerful as he is in different ways. So it's like, they have the same abilities. They're, you know, so it's like, she just was gold. And for no, just kind of doing nothing.
With a terrible, you know? I don't even know if it was a wig, wasted. But like terrible hairstyling.
yeah. Well, and then
I mean, they're
and
not
then I
known
also,
for their wigs, you know.
Yeah, they are. I mean, well, they are known for them, actually. Just not in the way that they want to be.
infamous, I would say.
I kept secretly hoping, but was also relieved she did not participate, that Michelle Yeoh would come back, even in a cameo, since we had the Ravagers, and I was like, oh, Sly is back. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it's better that Michelle is not in this.
Yeah. Well, and then.
I guess he could have done without that stuff when he's like teaching himself how to do the arrow thing. Like, I literally would have been fine if we just had him know how to do it. Like, I didn't need any of that. You know, I would have been fine just assuming he could do it.
That's the stuff that I would cut the most. And I appreciate including Cosmo and having Cosmo be a thing. I found her a little bit annoying a lot of the time, but I liked her okay. But
I actually thought the good dog or the bad dog thing was very funny. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I just kept laughing at it.
That was fine, but the other usages was like, okay.
Yeah, just like every time we go back there, I just didn't know why we need to be there, you know. Yeah. But then also one of the high evolutionaries, the hench lady, I guess, I don't know what they're called. Hench person, but the one who eventually, you know, takes over. I was like, God, who are you? And it's Miriam Shore, who I don't know if you've watched Younger, but she's Diana and Younger, and I love her. And I was like, whoa, because she's bald and all this. And I was just like, wow, what are you doing in here?
Oh, but, I did not recognize, but I did recognize Nico Santos. Like, oh. And I was like, good for you, Nico.
Well, apparently, I think Pete Davidson was in it. I think he was one of the alien things, one of the, I don't know if he's a Ravager or what, but
what?
I saw pictures of him on set, and he was like,
oh, I didn't see anything about that, but. That's fine.
Yeah. I don't think he had like a big like role. He just
Well, again, talk about like moments you can cut. Like I, you know, it was some of the humor. I did laugh at it. I fully acknowledge, but you know, like the I have a moron plot line. I was like, yeah. We get it. You know, it's your wife and it's your friend, and like I get that Nathan Fillion is in all of his movies and all or whatever it is. But I was like, it's a
rough. Yeah. Well, and I the one thing, even though I was upset about Adam Warlock. The part that I laughed at was when he like totally obliterated the guy, and she was like, and then she cuts to her and she's like, I said, show him or whatever. She was like, I said, like, show him why he should be afraid of us or something. And it was like,
yeah, I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
We all got offended.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, I was offended. Then he like stumbles on the wall. He's trying to lean on. I was like, okay, I hate you. But I laughed at that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, let's be honest. When Peter Quill returns in some form or another, I'll still end up watching it, but I won't be excited about it. That is what I have to say about it.
Yeah, I won't be either. Yeah, I don't know. It's just
We finished it. We watched the thing.
Let's just be thankful that also by the end of it, like with as out of place the Gamora stuff might be, I was thrilled that she didn't like fall in love with him.
Yes.
Because I was just like, the whole time I was just like, you're so annoying. Like, I get it. I'd be like sad too if like the love of my life was standing there and it wasn't, she didn't remember me or he'd remember me.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's just like, I'd be sad. But I just like feel like it was so just like, oh my God, take no for an answer.
Yeah, no means
like,
no. You know,
like, yeah, and yeah, if they exactly. went the route of her being like, you're right, I am in love with you, I would have been like, oh, this is stupid. So I was glad that she didn't. And she went home, and I liked the little part with her and the Ravagers, and like, that's her family.
I did like that.
So it still was like a nice
accepted
little.
Her yeah. And like, so it's yeah. not like a bad thing at all.
Yeah.
That's fine. Nice. Live your best life, Gamora.
Yeah, do it.
All right. Well, moving on to a different type of science fiction speculative. We watched the first two episodes of Silo on Apple TV Plus. What did you two think? I'm going to start with Jackie.
I loved it.
Excellent.
I'm obsessed.
Correct.
Definitely.
I don't have opinions.
I'm in.
Great.
Yeah. No, I really liked it.
Okay. Matt?
Yeah, I'm digging it. I'm excited Great. About it. I know, Daniel, we had talked about it a tad on the side when you had initially watched some of it. And I was like, because you're talking about the book. And I have read the books. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember every detail, obviously. It's been, you know, a little bit. But from what I can tell, it's very successfully adapted so far.
Excellent.
Cool. Which is cool. The books are a bit of like a compilation of short stories, if you will. All about yeah. this stuff, like, you know,
yeah,
and they're weaving this a little. It seems, I don't know, just two episodes in, but it seems like it's kind of weaving it, and they're already foreshadowing certain things that I know are coming. That I'm like, okay, they're bringing a cohesion to it in this medium that it needs that a book doesn't need in the same way. And this may not be the best example for present company, but I'm a big fan of Cloud Atlas, like the book, and I love the movie. But what I love about the film is how they take the structure of this really dense book that's written in such a weird way, and they weave it in a way that I also found entertaining. It's like when you have a medium that's different, making it so that the story works for that medium in whatever capacity that is. You know what I'm saying? But like that, yeah. This feels like a successful version of what they did there too. So I'm into that.
All right. Well, I'm very excited because the book just became available to me at the library, and I had checked it out, and we'll be reading it. Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, it's funny because the other two became available first, and I was like, no, I can't read them. I have to wait. And then just yeah. as Silo came out, they're like, your hold is ready. I was like, yes.
Yeah, oh, nice. The first one, I think, is called Wool, right? I don't remember.
Yes, it
I don't,
is. Yeah.
And I can't tell yet. I don't know how many.
What is pulled from what? Yeah.
Season is encompassing.
Yeah.
But that's exciting. Yeah. I figured yeah. maybe when it's over, maybe I'll.
Yeah, no, I've never. I've never read them, so I guess I'll wait until the end, probably. At this point, I'm enjoying the show enough that I don't mm-hmm. wanna.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, yeah. And it's yeah, yeah. At this point, you might as well, like, when I was watching it, I found myself kind of, like, wishing I hadn't read it. You know, I hadn't already.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Read it before I knew it was being made. Not for, like, I love, the books were really good, but not for, like, oh damn, I don't want to have read them, but it's just like to be experiencing it all.
It takes you out a little bit because you're oh, okay, I know what's happening next. Whereas like if you haven't read it, you can just be fully immersed in the story and like
yeah, like right now I'm looking forward. It's just a different kind, right? Like it's like I'm looking forward to like things that I know are coming to see how they do them. But mm-hmm. it's like
But this one also has yeah, a good mystery to be sort totally of at the heart surprised. Of it, right? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because it's like one of those things where it's like you really don't know who's yeah. lying at this point, right? Like we really right. don't know. And so that is compelling as fuck, right? And so it's yeah. just different when you know the answer, or at least you have yeah. more answers that you guys probably have more answers, at least if we don't know the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Did you find the sort of casting shift from episodes one to episodes two? Because I think that's the one. Rashida gets pretty wrapped up in episode one, right?
Yeah, she's yeah. literally just. Oh, so she got replaced?
No, she heard the story. So the book is like this too. It's,
what do you mean by casting shift? I'm confused.
Well, like going from like you're following Rashida Jones and you're following is it?
Oh,
story. David Oyelowo.
Sorry, someone got recasted between.
No, no, sorry, that was a bad phrasing on my part. I just, I was like, oh my god, did I spoil everything?
No, the cast you're following. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No, yeah, no. She's I am very fond of that style of storytelling where we're following different people and stories start to intertwine, and I love that shit. So,
yeah, I mean, I went into the show literally knowing nothing about it, just like clicking on it, being like, oh, okay. And, you know, yeah, it's very.
I didn't even see a trailer. I knew it was sci-fi, and that's about it.
Well, the reason I was like not confused by the first one, I was like, oh shit, Rashida Jones is in this. Is like the marketing, the minimal marketing I saw was very aggressive, like Rebecca Ferguson, Rebecca Ferguson, mm-hmm. Rebecca Ferguson.
I was yeah, like, then it makes sense when you figure out that she, you know, is gone. But it's like, you don't, you know, I had the same reaction. I was like, Rashida Jones is in there. Yeah. That's strange. Because you think her face would be everywhere.
Right.
But then, you know, it's clear why.
But. No, Rebecca Ferguson, I think she's a really – Rebecca Ferguson. I think both of them are good actresses, yeah. But shifting to Rebecca Ferguson, I think she's a good actress. I don't know who I would have cast in the part, but I don't know if she reads like physically strong mechanic room engineer lady to me necessarily, you know?
I don't know. I'm buying it. I am.
Yeah, I really like – I really like her.
And she did that, I don't know, move in the room with the thing. I kind of
like it. Yeah, I'm curious to see how she continues to develop in the role. Like I'm into her. I like her as an actress, but yeah, I'm buying it enough. I would say
I have a feeling if I had read it first, I would have pictured someone else.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there would be no like doubt in my mind that this person would be a lot larger if I had casted it myself in my head. But I think like, you know.
But, you know.
But I really like
it. I liked her.
Very into the casting of George, because I really liked George, and I liked how he was handled.
Is George the technology man?
The one who shows up. Dead.
Okay.
That's like, did he kill himself? I thought he made me smile. Like, and I like him in the book, so I was just like, you know, I was excited for George, and I thought he was handled well.
I have questions about the Common casting. I actually think Common can and has been a very good actor, but there's something about like his performance in this that I'm like, it's just a tiny bit out of place, just a tiny bit to me.
Yeah, and I can see that.
We've really met much of Common yet.
He should have like shown up.
Yeah, he's there. He just
But
I could see that.
Yeah, and especially what they like ask him to do later. I'm just like, it's Common.
But I'm liking David Oyelowo. How do you say it?
Oyelowo.
Oyelowo. I'm liking him a lot, and I actually really like the lady who plays the mayor.
Oh yeah, the lady who plays the mayor is great.
She's really good. Yeah.
What is she? Mm-hmm. She's in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, she looks so familiar, and I was like, what has she been in? But I feel like she's one of those ones who's just in like a lot of different things, but is never usually like the main star.
Geraldine James is the mayor. God,
she's in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. How funny.
She's also in Sherlock Holmes, Calendar Girls.
Yeah.
So she's Arthur.
Been in it. She's been around, you know?
Downton Abbey as Queen Mary.
How funny.
So, you know. But yeah, she's also in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Yeah. But Will Patton's always a good time too. And it's like, yeah, it's just... it's enjoyable. It's well done, nicely shot, and
I cannot remember being this. And maybe it's because I had no expectations, but like this excited about, especially a sci-fi show, or like you know, it's sci-fi, but it's not. I guess it's what speculative fiction or whatever. That feels like it's being done well and not stretching too far. And it's like, yeah, I believe this could happen, and I believe that we would like fall apart technology wise, and people would you know be reduced to 8-bit whatever, and. We live in a regulatory commissioned society and all this. This tracks.
I've actually read sci-fi that's very similar to this, but it's like, you know, I like this type of story. I'm into it. I like a dystopian,
it's kind of run-of-the-mill dystopian future.
And I do love a mystery at the heart of it. And I like that it's character driven rather than, you know, only mystery based. So it's, you know, we're learning about these different people and what they've done to survive down here and all that stuff. So
yeah, your setting can be similar to other things that exist as long as there's some fresh, you know, characterizations and fun things. So it does it well. I mean, and at its core, you know, it's kind of the premise as it starts out really is kind of like a Wall-E for adults, you know? So I liked that right away when I was reading it. I was like, oh, this is Wall-E for adults. Even though I argue that's also for adults, but no, but just the idea that like, oh, the surface is no longer hospitable and this and that.
Yeah,
and it's like,
exactly.
We have to go into this.
And most of the things I've read you know, we go into space and it becomes like an Exodus fleet thing. But like,
well, and she's like, oh, I have to go out there and clean.
You know, it's a similar story to the same, you know, we're underground. And there's definitely a Star Trek episode where they
find
a planet of people who didn't realize they were underground for no reason. Not that that's what's going to happen here. We don't know that yet. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not even speculating at the moment. But, we'll see.
I mean, spoilers for Mando season 3, but, you know, they're not underground, but the whole planet isn't inhospitable anymore, you know.
No, it is not. Was it ever, you know?
So, we see it a lot, I think, but.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. Very excited.
I do, too.
All right. And then other shows, we watched Queen Charlotte. Matt watched half of it. I ended up finishing it.
I have not finished it, which is.
Whoa! Unexpected.
I'm on the last episode. I haven't watched it.
Okay. All right. How are we feeling so far?
It was a little dark. It's more of a like Nicholas Sparks romance people. And I wanted more of a like fairy tale romance. You know,
yeah.
And I should have known, obviously, what we know about the couple and him being insane and her not, you know, kind of being alone. But it was just a very kind of dark version.
So fun fact, I didn't realize that Bridgerton is supposed to take place during the actual reign of King George and Queen, the real Queen. You know, I thought it was like a fictionalized England. And so I had the same reaction in terms of darkness where I was like, wait a minute. Like, did this woman actually pop out 15 kids and were there actually no heirs? And then I started to I was like, oh no, this is.
Oh, see, I realized it was real, I guess.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
But
that,
I just, I did.
It is very, it is
and it's like, I knew that it was like not a great story, but I did just, I don't know. I thought maybe we'd just get there, they'd be in love and he went crazy later in life, not like immediately.
No, apparently right away.
And so it's like, it's just hard to watch. Like, I'm supposed to get invested in this couple knowing that it's just going to be bad, you know? Sucks.
Yeah.
That's funny. I had the opposite reaction. I like it fine. I'm not like in love with it. I'm not in love with Bridgerton, but opposite reaction where I was like, I kind of like the idea of her kind of learning, or they love each other, I think, right? But like learning to love this guy and he has this affliction, if you will, this condition, or I don't know, you know? And I kind of like their love story more than I would have. It's hard. You know what I mean? It's like, whereas like when we see them, when you meet them in Bridgerton and stuff, it's like, I was like, I felt like a fairy tale romance would have felt like just out of place for who they were. But I guess if he had gone crazy in real life, whatever, then it's like, that would be like so sad and melodramatic to like have that happen later in life. But then.
Then you know, but if it's like, so it's hard, you know, like I get it,
but it's, you know, but it's like, you know, she loves him for
I'm
who
enjoying
he is
it well enough. It's just, like, I just haven't been in the mood to watch something so dark.
Yeah. It was dark. It is dark.
Yeah.
And it is interesting though. Cause like, I remember the first season of Bridgerton came out, you know, peak pandemic effectively. And so gobbled it up. And I think we did it on the podcast and I will not, it was not a hate watch, but not like, no, I probably called it a hate watch, but you know, I not guilty pleasure, but you know, I just like wasn't as into it, but I still consumed the whole thing very quickly. And then I ended up watching season 2 of Bridgerton and I actually really did not like that. Like I will admit in retrospect, I was like, yeah, Bridgerton season 1 was like soapy and watchable. 2, I was like, I have no investment in this except for wanting to learn more about the like Lady Whistledown stuff. But the romance for me did nothing. And then this one, I was like, oh, I feel like they did a better job with the romance and like balancing that back. But to your point, Jackie, just like the sadness of it. It's so dark and dire. I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, we went too far in another direction.
Teenage Jackie would have just like lapped this up. I love it. I loved a tragic romance. It's still sort of like a tragic romance. But yeah, I just haven't been in the mood to like, you know, sob. So.
Yeah, it's and I can see that. I'm like in between both those things where I'm like with you, Dana. Like I didn't love the first Bridgerton. I didn't watch the second one.
Yeah,
but I think I was pleasantly surprised that this felt like it had more like, you know, oomph to it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like I the soapiness of, or that's the right word, you know, for the first one, I was just kind of like meh. But yeah, I'm liking the emotional part of it a little bit more. I will say, though, I'm not, at least with where I'm at in it, I'm not so far kind of, I think that the actress is doing a really good job for what's written, but I'm not really seeing how I think she is Queen Charlotte.
Yeah.
Like, the way Queen Charlotte acts in,
yeah,
I'm going to call it present day timeline, you know, yeah. That we know.
Yeah.
Versus as younger. And even like in the, I think it was like the second episode, and she's going in there and it's somewhat funny, but she's in there like yelling at all her children, being like, one of you will give me an heir, blah, blah. And then later on, she's like talking to the one of the ladies, I forget, like talking about like, oh, well, you know, my children married for love. And she's like looking around like this foreign concept of just like, well, you should be in love. I don't understand. But then you're making us watch this like love story,
yeah,
about her, you know? So I'm like, what do you mean you don't remember wanting to be in love? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like that kind of like, I don't buy it. Like, I'm like, how?
Well,
so unless something might happen later where she shows how she gets really hardened, but so far she's not. And I've just been like interested in that, you know?
I mean,
seems like a different person.
Are you going to watch the rest of it?
Probably. Yeah. That's the thing. Is I'm just where I'm at right now. I haven't felt yet that I'm understanding how she becomes.
I feel like that is a flaw of the series as a whole. And I feel like it is, mm-hmm, because he does become afflicted so early that they were just like, oh God, we don't know how to deal with this in like a completely non-depressing way. So we're just going to sweep it under the rug and not like cleanly tie it up. And obviously like the circumstances of, hey, she spent however many years, you know, as effectively like a single parent probably is what they're counting on us to assume. But I don't think it goes in, because I think it would have just been too depressing to like deep dive into. So you're right. It is. It does not go there. And if like a romantic theme, you know, whatever, then it may have been more substantial.
Yeah, well, and with how Jackie's feeling too, I feel like part of that, and I could be wrong, but part of it too, if you think about it, like part of what made Bridgerton fun is the like gossip, almost like Gossip Girl nature of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Kind of right where this is kind of not like juicy and gossipy. This is actually just like sad. Whereas I was thinking in like the first episode, I know he's the Mad King as he's been called in history,
yeah,
which probably isn't very, it's kind of derogatory, but that was like how I've always heard of him and everything. So I know that, but at the start of it, it was giving very Marie Antoinette, and like he wouldn't sleep with her because he's actually maybe homosexual. And it was I was like, oh, how juicy would this be if like,
I was really hoping he was going to be like, you know? Yeah, exactly. He was going to be like falling in love with someone else, and that we're going to see her like, you know, like he gets a gay love story, and then we get, you know, and then he gets like punished for being gay. They basically like give him a lobotomy or something, and then he ends up mad, and then, you know, which isn't real life. I get it. But that's what I was.
Well, when
like House of the Dragon, you know, like,
soapy fun, like gossip, weird shit, where you're like, all right, but this was like,
well, if she has 15 children that are not actual real heirs, so they're not even his, but it's a secret. It's like the dark
secret. So this was that is what I thought was happening, because in the beginning it was like, and no legitimate heirs to the throne. And because I didn't realize that it was supposed to be actual King George and Queen Charlotte, I was just like, oh my God, he secretly is gay, and then like she took a lover, and so therefore now they're figuring out like Lady Whistledown's gonna destroy the British monarchy because she's gonna reveal that none of Queen Charlotte's children are actually Queen Charlotte's children, you know, or King. I thought that's where we were going, and then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So the juiciness feels missing here, and so I could totally see that if that's a complaint.
And it's just a very depressing.
Just dark and depressing, which is, you know, fine. Yeah. It's just not what I was wanting. You know, but I like all the seasons of Bridgerton. I'm looking forward to the next one in the, you know, Whistledown installment that's not a prequel. I don't think we really needed the sub-story of, well, have you gotten there? Maybe you haven't gotten there.
I don't think he's gotten there, and I'm going to make the same.
Say it if you want. I'm not particularly worried about it, you know.
Lady Danbury gets a lover.
I don't like it.
Young version of Lady Danbury gets a lover, and there's a reveal to it that is a little
sticky.
It's a little soap opery. Okay. You know what I mean? I would rather have Lady Whistledown take down the monarchy than what happened.
Yeah.
If we're going to go for soapy, weird drama.
Pretty perturbed by
It's just pretty like
that plot reveal.
Now I'm excited.
It's
just know what it is. Like, oh, I think I'll like it. I know. Just know what it is.
You're gonna, you can join the icky creeped out club too.
Piqued my interest.
It's just yeah. This is my challenge with like, and I think this is a romance trope. If I'm right, you know, like the romance novels where it's like, oh, like families are all intricate. And it's also like, no, that's something else. There's a ton of inbreeding in the actual British, you know, mm-hmm. upper echelons, but everyone is too connected in ways. And I'm like, oh, think about how actually they'd be really. And yeah, I struggle to overlook those points.
Yeah.
Much like how I also struggled to overlook the fact that they kept being like, she's 17, she must bear an heir. And I'm like, ugh.
I know. And really younger back
15
then.
15 children.
Really young, yeah.
So many. They
would, I mean, as soon as you got your period, you're fair game. So,
I know. Yeah, I was just like, oh, this is brutal.
Yeah, but no, it's
children lot, who didn't.
Yeah. I also have so far kind of been rolling my eyes at the subplot of the two, the gay guys, but the two.
I don't dislike them.
I've been rolling my eyes. I just like
Cogsworth and Lumiere because they
kind of. Mm. Yeah, I don't dislike them as characters. I've been rolling my eyes at like the
setups that they put them in.
Like how they're like, and they're like getting in these little like tiffs over like, well, it's your guys'
my
fault.
My bad.
Blah, 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 and it's whatever. Yeah. And I'm just like, this is so silly. Like, this is just like, I don't know. I was just like, whatever. But I wasn't, I liked the idea that they had this like relationship on the side and it's like, you know.
Well, I thought he was going to be.
They would live it together.
I thought the king was going to be stooping his kingsman, and that's the like thing that we were going to find out.
That could have been interesting. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I guess they're not.
Also, the actor that plays George, A, feels a bit more attractive than I think that the older actor who plays George probably ever was, but also I keep thinking he looks like Dave Franco.
He does certain, like angles,
and I'm like,
he really
like,
does, what? Yeah.
And I just keep laughing, imagining if it was Dave Franco, like how much I couldn't take this seriously at all. Yeah. Like, no shade to Dave, but I just couldn't see it.
The actor who plays young Brimsley is also like a glow down for the Queen's Man, you know, because also the other actor. I'm like, oh, well, actually, I'm like, that's nice. That's nice that they think
that he could have, The guy who plays George reminds me a lot of one of my friend's ex-boyfriends. And so it's very bizarre when he's on screen. Oh. I was like,
Is your friend's ex-boyfriend
friend
Dave Franco?
Dave Franco.
It's actually, remember that terrible wedding we went to that was like not fun? Actually, can you bleep out the name?
Yep.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Chris, in case one of our five listeners.
I don't need to be that person. You know?
She's number six.
You know what? We'll take every listener we can, person who can't hear us because they don't know who we're talking about. Could be you.
The guy that she married was really hot.
Okay.
It was secretly Dave Franco.
Yeah,
but it's fine. Like, more power to anyone who's enjoying it.
Yeah. It's easy, you know?
But it's not, is the thing. I'm like,
it's just a little dark. It's just like,
dark. But I guess it's just, I don't know. Like, I guess the way I have it too is kind of how I thought of Bridgerton also. I didn't sit here and like intently watch them like, you know, I have them on and I'm kind of like doing things sometimes. Like, you know, it's like, it's easy, like background kind of like, I'm watching it, but I'm not like devouring every frame and being like, oh, I must know everything about, you know. And so it's like, for me, it's just been easy so far. But again, I'm three in, so it's not, it's dark, but it's not that dark yet for me.
Well, just you, but no. All right. Well, we're watching what? What else have we been watching? We know Jackie's been watching Housewives.
I just finished season 7 of New York. So that was exciting.
She made it through Aviva Drescher.
Wow. What a time.
Through a lake and everything.
One of the most iconic scenes in Housewife history.
Yep.
Throwing the leg.
I can't believe she got fired right off of it. It's just so funny.
I know. Well, and then her fight, her like manufactured like fight with Carol, where she like was like referencing other housewives' fights in the past because she just researched the show so much. Like, she's just, and she's like, I'm up here, you're down here. And she's like,
get it? I made a callback. I made a callback to the thing.
Just nutty.
Oh my God. Wait. Have you gotten to Carol's Last Great Summer yet?
No, I don't.
Or like Carol's. Okay, well, you have something else to look forward to.
There's so much to look forward to.
Yeah. There's so much to look forward to.
I love Carol. Carol's probably my favorite so far.
I love
Carol's an interesting cookie.
Yeah, I love her, and I recommend her books.
Oh my god!
I recommend listening to them because she reads them, so it's nice. Oh. But yeah, what did I do? I watched the first episode of Fatal Attraction.
Oh, okay, I've heard good things. Paramount
Plus. Yeah, I'm not. I like the movie quite a bit. I do think. Well, I mean, I'm not like in love with it, but you know, I like it. But I do think that it could use the updating, you know, because it does kind of. The character of Alex ends up being a very one-dimensional, you know, kind of like, oh, she's the crazy girl. Mm-hmm. And it kind of perpetuates that a lot. So I think that there's definite room for something like this. I'm just, Joshua Jackson, I like him fine, but I think he's just miscast. Like, there's just no chemistry so far for me. But it's not badly done.
I haven't seen it. You know, I like him, but I also am not like, I don't know if I would.
I like him as like the goofy nerd. And I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. Like, you can't be on Fringe and on Dawson's Creek playing similar doofusy characters and expect me to buy something else.
I loved him on Fringe.
And
I'm
it's
not
like
saying I didn't. I'm just saying.
No. I agree with you, but I'm just commenting like, damn, I loved him on Fringe.
It's just he could play, I guess, this part if he wanted to, because it's not so off crazy. But I know it's just, but to be this like, you know, Michael Douglas and Glenn Close, it was like, When you're watching it, it's like, I don't know, I just felt like there was so much chemistry between them. It was just like palpable, you know? And so it feels real. Whereas this is just like, I mean, he's married to Amanda Peet and he's going to have an affair with Lizzie Kaplan. And it just doesn't, I just don't feel, I'm not believing it yet, but we'll see. I don't know. I've heard it gets better and better, but I'm intrigued.
All right. I've been watching Jewish Matchmaking, which is a similar series to Indian Matchmaking. I don't think it's as good, sadly. I don't think the matchmaker is as strong as Seema Aunty. And I also find myself checking my biases a little bit more because I'm like, oh, this is technically my community. And, it's a little harder to tune out and watch when you're like, how are you representing us? Like, it's not terrible, but it's a similar situation to actually Indian Matchmaking. There's a lot of like patriarchal history and you know, a lot of the men's expectations. But then there are also like perfectly modern, super liberal couples on it. But, you know, it's just a little, it's not as turn your brain off for me personally, but that may be just because it is my community.
Did that make sense?
Yeah. I'm also watching The Other Two is back. The first two episodes are out. Do either of you watch that?
I don't think I've seen
HBO. That. Oh my god. It might make Jackie crawl out of her skin. Which is always a great way to sell a show. But
I was like, it's not hard to do, not hard to do.
Yeah. But it's a comedy.
It's a low barometer. It's a low barometer.
Yeah. It's about these two realistic but not like perfect people who their 13-year-old brother is like becomes an overnight pop sensation and they're just like, you know, the other two and their whole lives revolve around this kid now. And it's very funny. Molly Shannon plays the mom. Mm. Yeah, I highly recommend it. The third season just came out or is starting to roll out. And I was very
HBO
happy.
HBO Max, you said? Or
HBO Max.
It's about to be.
Yeah, soon to be whatever the hell they want to call it. And then I watched Intergalactic, which is the Kid Cudi Netflix animated film, which I somehow missed during the earlier half of award season. But it was... It was a lot different. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, I thought it was going to be like a space... trippy sci-fi like visual album thing. It's basically just a classic rom-com but animated for adults. It's it has adult themes, but I was just like, oh, all right, this isn't bad. Oh, and then the last thing I watched is did I talk about What's Love Got to Do with It?
No, but can't imagine it's fabulous, is it?
So I think I mentioned last week, again, talking about the matchmaking thing. Weirdly ended up in like a vortex of a bunch of things that just happened to be about that. And so it's Lily James and Shahzad Latif, who was on Star Trek Discovery. Emma Thompson.
I was thinking of a different film.
Oh, I'm
I was
not
thinking
sure,
of the one with like Nick Jonas and Priyanka Chopra Jonas. And
no, thank you. That sounds terrible. I mean,
that's what I was thinking of. So I was like,
I mean, the wild thing about this is directed by the person who did Elizabeth and Elizabeth the Golden Age.
Oh,
yeah.
Love them both.
It's not Elizabeth and Elizabeth the Golden Age, but it's fine. I think the thing I struggled with it a little bit is like the like white saviorism potentially of it. Mm. Even though it is directed and like made by you know, people of East Asian descent. But yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that can't creep in, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then there are like a bunch of like deeper themes that it starts to go into, but then it's just like, just kidding, rom-com. And I'm like, no, come back. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever heard of this. Funny.
I think it came out in like the UK and it just hit like US distribution over the week. Got it. Okay. It's a smaller movie, but
that
you know.
Makes sense.
But yeah.
Oh yeah, and then the last thing I had done on Paramount was I did watch the first episode of Rise of the Pink Ladies, which Dana, I agree with your assessment. It's not for me.
Thank you.
Because we had talked about it a little bit
before. I actually did watch that as well, and I'm not fond of it either.
Yeah. I don't think it translates.
I wanted to like it, but it just wasn't my thing.
I didn't like any of the songs either.
Yeah.
The songs weren't great.
And the story was mixed. Well, it's like, yeah, I don't like, I know it's par for the course with musicals a lot of the time, but I don't like it when there's a musical number and the vocals are just so clearly like mixed for a studio recording. Like, like there's no world where this is coming out of your mouth right now, you know? And it's not like everything has to go full like Les Mis where they're singing live on camera and it doesn't sound great all the time, but it's just something where it's like you can mix it in a way that makes it seem as if the vocal is happening in that scene, and it's just not at all. It's like, it sounds auto-tuned and like stuff. And I'm like, oh, I do not like this. But
yeah. And yeah. I know they're trying to like mask it in the like very break the fourth wall, but just like the choreographed staging of it and making me like, oh, this is like a musical number. But I also bristle up against anytime. Or like anytime somebody gets dubbed, even you're like, that's not your voice. Like it's such a hard thing to fake visually, like singing live. And I'm like, ugh.
Well, and so many people make the mistake of just moving your mouth and not like the best ones are when they're lip syncing, but you can tell they're really singing on set too because you can see their veins in their neck and like they're singing, you know. But some people just like move their mouth and it's like, that's not, honey, that's not doing it.
You know who actually like legit comes to mind for this, just to bring it back, is I remember watching The Greatest Showman and watching Rebecca Ferguson as this supposedly, you know, like opera singer. And I was like, no.
Well, and like, belting out,
yeah,
you know, and like belting.
You can't fake your voice, like vocal cords moving, but they like vibrate, you know, like physically. You could see the outside; people can't see it, but I'm grabbing my neck, which is horrifying. Anyway.
No, but yeah, you got to do it, you know.
Yeah,
it's full circle.
Anyway, full circle. All right. Well, we had a trying week, but thank you both. Thank you, as per usual, to Jackie and Matt. And now a very quick follow-up point. So it turns out it is slightly harder to find a Star Trek episode that takes place, in an uninhabited but inhabited planet. Or Trekkies, help us out here, because the search terms on Google were not great. If you search Star Trek Silo or Star Trek Habitable, actually, if you search the latter, you get a bunch of things about NASA results and actual habitable planets, which is very cool, the Class M stuff. But the closest thing we could find was there's an episode of Voyager called Friendship One, where they go to what they think is an uninhabited planet, but it turns out there's a very good reason for people being underground. So, you know, if it doesn't exist in Star Trek, I'm sure there's other sci-fi out there. But that has been it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, we would love it if you could leave us a rating or a review or even consider subscribing.